नमस्कार, मेरा नाम साहिल है और आज मेरे साथ जुड़े हैं अर्ज बग्गा, वाइस प्रेसिडेंट ऑफ एचआर एडवाइजरी एंड ग्लोबल कंसल्टेंसी गार्टनर। वेलकम टू एसबीएस अर्ज।
थैंक यू।
अर्ज, फर्स्ट आई वुड लाइक टू आस्क यू व्हाट्स हैपनिंग इन द मार्केट एट द मोमेंट। वी सीन एवरीवन इज टॉकिंग अबाउट रिसेशन। हाउ द एचआर फर्म्स आर प्रिपेयरिंग फॉर अ रिसेशन एट द मोमेंट?
Yeah, so I think a lot of our clients are still, like many, people and organizations right now still aren't sure of where the economy is going to go, whether it's going to sustain itself and kind of continue teetering on recession, or whether we will fall into recession. But I think what companies have been doing over the last 3 to 6 months is looking at planning for austerity measures, looking at placing more of a lens on their cost structure, how efficient they are, their processes are, and how productive their people are. Those are probably the three buckets I'd put their focus into. And it's all part of preparing for the worst and hoping for the best is kind of the sentiment that I would translate. We're hearing from our clients at the moment.
Arj, I was also reading an article in Australian Financial Review where you were quoted saying that companies are also updating the definition for underperformers. So could you explain more on that?
Yeah, for sure. So, the underperformance is a bit of a hazy area for organizations and managers. Right now our HR clients say that only about 29% of managers accurately identify underperformance. And part of that is there isn't a functional or accurate or clear definition for what it means. The way I think about it and the way that I've communicated it to clients is underperformance is very simply where an employee or maybe a team doesn't, over a period of time meet their goals or their objectives. And that typically is over a 3 to 9 month period where they simply aren't able to facilitate the outcomes that are expected of them individually or collectively. So, and that can be for a myriad of reasons as well. Underperformance, I think the stigma around underperformance has been that it's very much the individual's or the employee's fault. And in a lot of our research, that actually shows that isn't the case. There are many different variables that impact underperformance, especially with what's happened over the last 2, 3, 4 years with a shift to hybrid working, and many different challenges around ways of work.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you think the introduction of artificial intelligence will also play a role now with HR professionals preparing a list of people who can be made redundant? At the same time, artificial intelligence combined with the artificial intelligence, it's a scary time for the employees.
Yeah, I understand it can be scary because maybe of a lack of information or communication around the transformation that will occur moving forward. I think, there's no doubt that AI will play a big role in updating the way that work is done. I think though, what we're hearing from clients is more a focus around reskilling and repurposing jobs than looking at redundancy necessarily from, an AI transformation. Or the integration, sorry, of AI. We're in an era where talent is so scarce, and especially critical talent is so scarce. It's very expensive. The cost of recruitment and the difficulty of recruitment keeps moving up and up and up, and the labor market's becoming more and more complex. And what that means is companies now are really seeing talent as a commodity. Or they're seeing talent as a resource that they have to maintain and sustain. Letting go of talent when there's an economic downturn or a digital transformation or whatever, isn't necessarily the best idea because, the labor market has become much more rigid, and being able to reacquire that talent if you need it is much harder. So I'd say that our clients' focus has been, and the questions we get is much more around repurposing and reskilling the workforce rather than redundancy as a byproduct of AI integration.
Does it mean that employees should not worry that much? As we have seen in the past, during recessions, there are large scale of layoffs. So as you're saying that now the labor market is tight, it's very difficult to find a talent. So rather than laying off, companies should focus on reskilling. Does it give some sense of security to employees?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially those employees who are motivated to reskill themselves. I think reskilling is a two-way street. It requires organizations to provide clarity around the key skills that they will need in the future. So being much more judicious with their analysis around what skills they need for now, what skills they need in 2 to 3 years, and trying to forecast as best as possible what they'll need in 5 years' time. Being transparent with the workforce around those skill needs, and then allowing and providing employees in the workforce with the resource training resources and enablement to be able to go and acquire those skills, whether it be experiences, whether it be kind of talent mobility across the organization or even outside the organization, or whether it be training courses, etc. So I would say, there isn't a need to worry for employees, but I would also say their focus needs to shift more towards how can I continue to evolve the skills that I have to better align with the needs of my own career aspirations, but also the needs of the organization.
Is there a list that companies have, when the recession hit or when they decide, it's time for them to let go people? How well that list is prepared in advance?
No, they don't typically have a list that's prepared in advance. That's not the, more of the work that's being done now, the preparation that's being done is around, as mentioned, kind of focusing on what processes they can get efficiency from, how they can make their workforce more productive. So how they can remove barriers to productivity and performance from their employees. And then the next measure they also are looking at is, okay, is there potentially an opportunity for reskilling or redundancy as well as part of consolidating, during an economic downturn. But when it comes to a list, no, I typically don't see, clients trying to create a list in advance.
There's also a notion that, when recession hits, people who are at a fat salary, they are the first one to go, or people who are at the bottom rung, they are also the first one to go. Is that correct, or we are just reading too much?
So that was the traditional approach to consolidating, the size of a workforce or making decisions around redundancy maybe 5 to 10 years ago, where essentially what would happen is leaders would, look at a particular salary band or a particular salary range, as you mentioned, high or low, for example, and look to make cuts there. And in that situation, the only factor you're really looking at is financial or economic factors, which is how much you pay someone to try and meet a financial savings target. What we've seen in the last 3 to 5 years, especially through COVID and post-COVID, is companies have become far more mature with how they make these decisions. And that's because, sorry, by mature, I mean they're considering a lot more variables. Now, why are they considering different variables? Because, as mentioned, the labor market is much tighter. Ability to acquire talent is much harder. If you look at the people who you are paying, who you've just brought into the organization or the top end of the salary range, you're not thinking about things like the criticality of skills, and how hard those skills are to acquire in the labor market, for example, etc. So if you think about like digital marketing, software engineers, data scientists, they're typically quite well paid. But ideally, you wouldn't really want to be letting go of those skill sets right now because they are the kinds of roles that will bring you back into growth. They're the kinds of roles that will help you innovate out of a recession. So I think nowadays companies look beyond just, or we encourage them to look beyond just salary and look at things like an employee's aspiration to grow, their aspiration to grow their skill sets, also the criticality of their existing skill sets and how it aligns with the company's needs.
Absolutely. So what would be your advice for the employees? Now we have heard from the employer side, like you said, what the company should do, can do. And you also briefly talked about employees that they need to reskill themselves, do they need to look what skills are required in the market. Is there any other advice that you would like to offer to employees?
Yeah, so for employees, what I would really encourage them to do is I'd empower them to, or encourage them to really, firstly, in terms of their current job, I would recommend that they hold talk to their managers about the factors and barriers that exist to them being able to perform or maximize their performance, whether they be process barriers, whether they be job clarity, the environment they work in, the training that they get. Really be clear and transparent with the manager and what is making it hard for them to perform to their maximum potential. The second thing I'd encourage, and then really work with their manager to remove those barriers. The second thing I'd encourage employees to then do is, again, hold their managers accountable to what are the future skill needs of the organization. Build a plan with their manager, with their L&D department around how they can reskill themselves or keep evolving their skill sets based on the needs of the organization. And then explore different avenues and channels through which they can get that skill acquisition as well. And again, you know, the best organizations are really thinking innovatively about how they provide that skill development to their employees right now. So those are probably the two big things I'd recommend employees start doing.
Thank you, Urs. Thank you for joining us.
Sounds good. Thanks for the opportunity. Nice to chat.